Hello and welcome to ESAB's Global Economy Podcast. My name is Fredrik Eriksson, and today I am very pleased to welcome Jörgen Warborn to talk about international trade, Europe and the world. That's a big topic, I know, but Jörgen sits in the European Parliament's International Trade Committee and of course works on all these issues. And for the last 5 years, he's been the leading champion of a Europe that is open to trade and that uses the opportunities we have of deepening our commercial relations with countries that are growing and that wish us well. Before being elected to the European Parliament in 2019, Jörgen was a member of the Swedish Parliament. He has held many political offices during his career, and before going into politics, Jörgen was a businessman, and throughout his time in Brussels, he has been a champion as well of small businesses and their growth. Earlier this autumn, he was elected president of SME Europe, an organization that works to increase the influence of small businesses in European policy. Jörgen, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much, Fredrik.
So we've had some interesting developments happening in the beginning of December, and I would say even positive developments, because the EU have now finalized a free trade agreement with Mercosur. This has been an agreement that has been negotiated for quite some time, I think over 2 decades. But now at least there is an agreement that we are going to start a debate again. You've been a strong voice for this agreement in Parliament. I wonder if we can start here. Why do you think this is an important agreement?
Well, of several reasons. And first of all, I'd like to say that I'm really happy that we are at this stage, finally, because it is a very, very important agreement for Europe, I would say. As you know, we are in a growth crisis in Europe, and we need to do everything we can to, first of all, increase our competitiveness and also tap into the areas around the world that is growing more than Europe. And the Mercosur agreement, that would create the biggest free trade zone of the world. And of course, giving businesses the opportunity to sell more to Brazil, to Argentina, to Paraguay and Uruguay. And that would be a game changer, I would say. And then that is on the business side, but there is also geopolitical reasons. We, of course, have seen how China has more and more interest in the region. And I hope that this agreement can help us build even closer relationship to these South American countries, because it's much better that we trade with them than China. And of course, this also gives a possibility for business owners to diversify their supply chains from China and to South America. So overall, it's a very good agreement for businesses and for Europe and European citizens. It gives more choices for European citizens as well. And hopefully we can use the agreement to help combating the inflation as well. So I see almost only positive sides.
And perhaps related to what you just said as well is issues around diversifications of things like critical raw materials and making sure that we can also have better access to other parts of the world where things like lithium is being mined and refined, so we can avoid being less dependent on single supplies from other parts of the world. But I wanted to ask about the politics of this agreement now, because we've already seen that all member states don't seem to be happy about this agreement. And I'm sure there is going to be lots of criticism coming towards it in the European Parliament as well. So how do you see the political process going forward now? Do you think this is going to be a very difficult agreement to get approved by the European Parliament?
Well, it won't be easy, that's for sure. There are a lot of, as you said, both member states that are negative and some hesitant. And that goes, of course, for different members of the European Parliament. So some groups are negative and some are a bit on the fence, I would say. So the work really starts now. Now the Commission has negotiated it, but now we have to start to scrutinize the agreement. And I think that is the most important ingredient here. We have to base our decision on facts. And on the facts I have on the table today, it is a very good agreement. It gives a lot of possibilities. And also, we didn't mention this before, we have a situation where the new administration in the US is speaking about increasing tariffs for European producers, for European businesses. So this is also another reason why we need this agreement, where we reduce and almost eliminate the tariffs for South America. So, but to answer your question once again, it will be difficult. It's a lot of hard work that we have to do, both on the council level and on the parliament level.
And on that point you just raised on perhaps difficulties coming along the way with America, do you think an agreement like this would also help to, how to put it, improve Europe's confidence and its ability to represent its own interest and also in that sense perhaps give some impulses that can help to sway the more protectionist rhetoric that is coming out of Washington, D.C. as well?
Yes and no. I think it would be very helpful for Europe and for our confidence, and not least for our reputation as a trade partner, because as you said initially, we have negotiated this for 24, almost 25 years, and it would be a pity if we are a partner that negotiate but then cannot ratify. On the US side, I'm unfortunately a bit pessimistic, I have to admit. I think we will see tariffs from Trump. And then if we see tariffs from Trump for European goods, then I guess we will see a response from the from Europe. And then once we have tariffs on both sides, which I don't like, which no one wins from that situation, then I think we will sit down at the negotiation table and see how we can solve that. And hopefully that means that we end the negotiation table with the US without any tariffs or very low tariffs. But let's see what will happen. But I think we will have some trouble in the medium term, so to say.
All right, let's turn to trade in a bit more general way. We've now been talking about Mercosur and some relations to America. And I would like to start by asking you about sort of the overall trade position of Europe, because the reality is that we haven't done that many trade deals in recent years. But now we have a renewed focus on competitiveness and raising European economic growth, as you said, and I suppose trade should be a central part of that agenda. But some influential voices keep downplaying the role of more trade. For instance, Mario Draghi, who in his report on the European competitiveness and its future, almost treated trade as a source of problem rather than an opportunity. So when sort of you start work for real now in your parliament sessions and you go into substance and policies, what are going to be your key asks on the new commission and on Europe more generally? Sort of what do you think is important now for the trade agenda, knowing that we didn't manage to do many trade deals in the past and we have a challenge now to raise competitiveness and growth?
So the let's start on the very broad perspective, and that would be in trade issues, that would be WTO, that would be the World Trade Organization. And we see that the WTO is in a lot of problem at the moment, but it is hugely important for European businesses. We base all our free trade agreements on the rules that the WTO has negotiated. So I would like the Commission to engage even more in WTO and show true leadership within WTO, because the US will not possess that leadership, will not use that their possibility. They are not interested. China do not have the legitimacy to do so, and Europe is really the only part that could do that. And the leadership is really important at this moment. It will not be easy. One of the most important part is to reform the WTO and not least to get back to a dispute settlement system that works. As you know, this is not working today. So we have international trading rules, but there is no dispute settlement mechanism, and we have to come back to that. It will, as I said, not be easy, but that is is very important. And I'd like us to negotiate more multilateral agreements on WTO level. I think that will be very hard. And then the second best is, of course, the plurilateral agreements that we negotiate with some of the partners within WTO. So that would be the focus: reform WTO and more plurilaterals. Then, on our own level, on the bilateral trade agenda, as you mentioned, we need more free trade agreements, basically. And if we can ratify the Mercosur, that would be fantastic. But we are also, we have to come back with Australia, which should be a low-hanging fruit, I hope. We should increase our efforts with India. And speaking on India, I think we will have to see a change when it comes to our free trade agreements, because we have, like, let's say the New Zealand one, which some of the political group mention as the new gold standard. I think it will be very, very hard to negotiate something like the New Zealand agreement with India. Because the New Zealand one is very comprehensive. It includes a lot of chapters, a lot of important stuff. But in India, they will not agree upon that. And we have to understand that if we have a counterpart that don't and that absolutely refuse it, we have to see what is second best for us. So I think we will see more sectorial agreements, more focused trade agreements. That's what I would like to see from the Commission, so that we negotiate part instead of one big comprehensive agreement, because we cannot continue, like with Mercosur, to negotiate for 20, 25 years and then nothing happens, because that means that our business is losing out. So more of a salami strategy, piece by piece, instead of the entire sausage.
More pragmatic, more flexible in the overall format of agreements. Is that roughly what you're talking about here?
Yes, and also let's get back to the core here. Free trade agreements is about trade. We cannot solve all the complicated issues of society with trade agreements. So let's have that as our core, meaning that we have very important issues to solve, like the climate crisis, like gender issues, like human rights issues, and so on and so forth. But what if we add everything to the trade agreements? It will be very, very, very complicated to negotiate them, and very, 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 very hard to ratify them. So I'd like us to come back to trade and see, we have a growth crisis in Europe. We have to focus on the trade issues when it comes to the trade negotiations, and that is where we can still pick up the growth, our competitiveness, and meaning that European economic power can still be there and even thrive, which is not the case today. And if we don't have the economic power, we don't have the geopolitical leverage that we will need in the future. So back to the core, back to trade, back to facilitating for business to do trade, because that is good for all.
Two other ideas that have been floating around European capitals and Brussels over the last couple of years. One would be that there could be some benefits from trying to modernize the stock of trade agreements we already have. Many of them are pretty old. Many of them don't include even chapters on services. A second idea, taking the leadership perhaps more from countries like New Zealand, Australia, Singapore, would be to also try to do pragmatic, flexible agreements on digital services and trying to use the energy and the stream of the structural change that happens on the back of digitalization. What do you think about these two ideas?
I absolutely agree. I think that is the way forward. And that is a bit saying it the same I said before, that we should be more sectorial. We should focus on some of the areas that is most important to Europe and to our partner nation. And then we should find a good solution between us, basically. So, yes, that is the way forward, because these big comprehensive free trade agreements with everything in them, they will be very hard to negotiate in the future.
Mm. There's another country which we have already discussed this, but only in the beginning that could become interesting as well, at least from the viewpoint that understanding that Europe has some agency and can take initiatives. And that country is, of course, America. So we've had the trade and technology partnership that has been going on over the last couple of years. We're now, of course, confronted with that turbulent trade rhetoric that comes from Donald Trump and people associated with him. And there may, as you said, Jürgen, there may be tariffs coming down the line. If you want to be an optimist, you can sort of flip it around and say, unlike the last time, it's not as if America is having sort of a big problem with Europe in terms of trade. Of course, the trade surplus that Europe has with America has grown, but the economic size of Europe has also shrunk. So it's not as important probably for Trump this time around as issues with China is going to be. And then you could perhaps think about Europe presenting initiatives that is actually going to help more trade with America. And that can be sectorally on automotives, but it can also be issues that have been talked about by lots of businesses, which is to cut regulatory barriers that exist, for instance, in manufacturing sectors like electrical engineering components, green products, etc. So do you think that can there be such a case here where Europe also uses its agency and try to propose something which could be helpful both in dealing with the protectionist rhetoric of Trump, but also lead to more trade?
Let's hope so. First of all, on the Trade and Tech Council, I think that is an excellent example where we should engage even more. And I'd like to see an agenda that focused more on the trade side, because we haven't seen a lot of output from the TTC so far. Of course, the tech side of it is really important. And one area where I think we should cooperate more is on artificial intelligence, and specifically on data rules. Because the way I see it today, we have, of course, from a European perspective, the GDPR. We have a strong, very strong focus on the personal fact the data is personal. But the US is viewing it from a different angle. It's more a raw material for businesses. And I think there should be a way that Europe and US could meet so that we have a more common approach and common standards of how we view data, meaning that we have to get a bit closer to them and they have to be a bit closer to us. I think that will benefit us hugely on a transatlantic point of view. And that would truly set a standard for the rest of the world. That is, I don't like this Brussels effect, that Brussels should set the standard for the rest of the world. And some that likes that idea is, of course, mentioning GDPR as the best example of this. I think it's a very bad example, actually. Because first of all, I don't think the rest of the world has used the same standard as we have. Meaning that we will still have it's not harmonized system. And it's once again a top-down process where politicians or bureaucrats decides rules that the companies then have to adhere to. I think the bottom-up process would be much better, of course, with involvement from regulatory perspectives. We need regulations on data. I'm not totally against it. But I think we have over-regulated a lot of stuff in Europe. And here we need the US. We need to work together with the US. And they have a total different approach to this. So we in Europe, we have to change our mindset of how we shape legislation and working more in a business-friendly way, because otherwise we will continue to lose competitiveness, and that will be very problematic for all Europeans, because we will lose in GDP, we will lose in income, we will not have resources to combat all the important societal assignments that we will have, like combating the climate change and so on. In the short term, I'm quite negative on the tariffs, as I said. I think they will come. There are that someone told me that Trump has actually not, since the election day, he has not mentioned tariffs and Europe together. So that's a positive sign that maybe, I mean, he has mentioned it in terms of Mexico and Canada, of course, and certainly China, but maybe he is switching a bit. I still don't think so. I think that will happen. And one of the reasons is that I think he needs it for his budget. On the positive side is that he probably will scrap the Inflation Reduction Act, which, of course, is protectionist. And that might help European businesses in a way. But my main message is, let's work together with US. Let's see what we can do together with the Trump administration. That's what we need now.
On Jürgen, your role as a champion also for SMEs, where do you see trade policy coming in for SMEs, for SME growth, and for utilizing that corporate base in Europe in a better way?
Well, speaking, I mean, the big corporations, they can go around all the different rules and legislation we have. For example, in trade, if there is a complication with trading in a certain country, the big corporation, they might set up a business in that country, even a factory, and then they don't have the hassle with imports and exports. Small and medium-sized businesses do not have that opportunity. They don't have the resources to do that. So the free trade agreements and all the trade policies that we do, they are there to help the small businesses, basically. That's the main task. The statistics is really poor here, because Europe has around 25.6 million small and medium-sized enterprises. 25.6 million. Out of those 25.6 million, only 600,000 export outside the US. So the potential is basically 25 million. 25 million that could export outside. So the question I ask myself and the Commission and my colleagues is, what can we do to facilitate for those SMEs so that they trade more? Because as we said before, the growth is elsewhere. So we have to tap into that growth. And one of the things we are doing is that we have these SME chapters in our free trade agreements. Apparently, they are not enough. And basically, they are a lot about transparency and setting up, having information about the trading rules and with our bilateral partners. But we need to do something more. And I think the Commission should start working with it, DG Trade together with DG Growth. That would be a very good match to come up with solutions that would help and facilitate for small businesses to trade even more. Because that, as I said, the potential is fantastic, and they would that would absolutely create some more growth in Europe, which we need.
And finally, Jürgen, I wanted to ask a question about security, because, I mean, in the last 5 years, we witnessed the introduction of several new defensive trade instruments here in the EU. And these are instruments that can help to deal with political coercion or problems with foreign state subsidization, for instance. But there's also been a general tone in the discussion that we now should move, in a general way, away from trade openness and to think much more about security and have more of a market closing attitude, partly because, of course, of new geopolitical risks that have emerged. How do you think about these issues, and how do you think about the balance between trade openness on the one hand and how we should deal with security problems on the other hand?
Yes, this is a very important question, and I think a lot of the upcoming 5 years will be about this. I would have hoped that we had a more offensive agenda and was working more on the side of more free trade agreements. Let's hope that we do that. I'm not totally against all the unilateral instruments that we have adopted recently, because I also see that we need them. We have another geopolitical situation that we did have 10 or 15, 20 years ago, and of course we have to adapt to that. But the main focus is, how do we balance the protecting part with the partnering part, with the promoting part, those three, to find the right balance between protecting, promoting, and partnering? That will be the most important issues for the next coming years. And I would see a lot of promoting. I would see we need to work on our economic agenda, of course, the security agenda as well. In a sense, when I first, like a year ago or so, I was pushing that it is really, really important that we have a full-time commissioner for trade, because we need to have 100% focus on trade issues. And then, of course, now Shevchenko, he has economic security and trade. And I've a bit changed my mind. I think this is an opportunity as well, because having both those themes might be very good, because if we had a commissioner only for economic security, I think that we would have more a tilted agenda towards the security part. But combining trade and economic security, I hope, will result in a free trade agenda, still open, but with not being too naive to some of the exposures that we have.
All right, very good. Thank you so much, Jürgen. That was a very, very, very good discussion. We could have continued for a long time, but we need to close here. So thanks for taking the time. And ladies and gentlemen, I have been speaking to Jürgen Warborn, who is a member of the European Parliament, where he sits in the International Trade Committee. Thank you.
Thank you.